Hello and welcome to NPR's Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Center for Independent Statehood here at Car Talk Plaza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Car Talk Plaza is planning to secede from the United States, and we're going to set up our own little society here with the whole little Car Talk family.
Right.
Just living together here in communal bliss.
Yes. So, you know, we'll let everyone know we'll have obviously a new address, right?
Yeah. Well, we can get our own post office.
Right. Instead of being Our Fair City, it can be Our Fair State.
Have I got mail?
Oh, well, unfortunately, we must go right. We have so many calls today.
We do.
We've got
Are they all
right
lined
the,
up?
They're lined up.
Here's one item. Look at this. As I was reading the paper this morning, I came across this picture. And what did I see before my very eyes? What is that? I'll give you a guess.
I have no idea.
Sonia Henny's tutu.
It is. She's a picture of Sonia Henny.
Sonia Henny wearing her tutu. See that? You mentioned her all the time, and you didn't even recognize your heartthrob. Did you know that she was inducted as an honorary sergeant in the United States Marines in 1947?
Jeez, she was?
What did I see?
Sonia Henny's
very eyes.
Tutu.
And that was from Ann Childers of Columbia, Missouri.
Well, you know, we ought to explain. From time to time, we refer to Olympic great Sonia Henny.
Olympic great. What
yes,
a
she
woman.
Was. Well, she went from the Olympiad.
Undisputed queen of the ice.
She went from the Olympics right to the ice capades.
Yeah.
In fact, she might have been the founding queen mother of the ice capades, for all I know.
And, of course, she wore as she skated a what?
Tutu.
A tutu.
But in Norway, I mean, in Sweden, they say what? Jumpin' Yimini. In right. Norway,
they say Sonia Henny's tutu.
Can we take a call? 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, I'm John Korolevich calling from Coopersville, Michigan.
Hi, John.
What's up?
Well, I got an 85 S10 Blazer, got 78,000 miles on it, and I got a mysterious Whoopi.
Whoopi?
A Whoopi.
A Whoopi.
It travels all around the vehicle.
Is this like a skeet or a raccoon?
Well, it could be, yeah. But I wouldn't shoot it, yeah.
This is a migratory Whoopi, huh?
Yeah. It sounds mostly like it's coming from the left front. I checked the tires for cupping.
You checked the tires and they were still there.
They're still there, yeah.
Yeah.
I rotated the tires. I looked to see if there was any broken belts or anything like that in the tires. Any lump that would make this sound. I couldn't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
I checked the shocks. It doesn't seem to be speed related. So, you know, I don't go fast enough for them to bounce, but it still has this whoop, 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 whoop. Especially
it.
When I turn right.
Mm.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm. If I turn left, it doesn't make any noise. If I turn right, it gets louder.
But going straight ahead, it makes
going
noise?
Going straight ahead, it's like a steady whoop.
Steady whoop.
But it's coming from one quadrant of the vehicle.
I think so.
Yeah, it's coming from the left front wheel.
Left front, yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Well, that's a good place to have it.
Okay.
If you're going to have it. That way, you know, it's close to you.
Uh-huh.
So when it gets bad, you know that something serious is at hand. But and you've taken the tire that was on that wheel and put it someplace else.
Someplace else,
and
yeah.
And the noise stayed in the same quadrant.
The noise stayed in the same spot.
That's good. That's the scientific method.
Yeah.
I love it, John.
That's good. All this should be telling us something.
Yeah.
It is. It's sinking in slowly.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm telling you something. It tells me nothing.
Well, especially the fact that when you make a turn, makes it go away or come back.
Uh-huh.
It would indicate wheel bearings.
Exactly.
Because when you turn like that, you shift the load from the inside of the wheel bearing to the outside of the wheel bearing, or vice versa.
Well, you're most likely to get the noise at its worst when you're making a right-hand turn, like exiting a highway.
Uh-huh, or a gradual right turn.
And that's when it's the worst?
The worst.
Yeah, that's when the greatest load is on that wheel bearing.
Uh-huh.
It might be that it just needs to be repacked. You've probably never done that, have you?
No, I've never done that.
It might be that it's loose.
You've never replaced the brakes on this thing either, have you?
No, I haven't.
How did you know that?
I've never done anything to this track.
Actually, John and I talked last week. No, we know that too. No, and when you should take the thing in and have them look at your brakes, because at 78,000 miles, it's likely you need brakes. When they do the brakes, they will take the discs right off and send them to the machine shop or do them in their own shop. They'll machine them. When they do that, they'll have an opportunity to look at the wheel bearings and figure out if they need to be replaced.
My guess is wheel bearing.
That's my guess, too.
Well, it sounds good to me.
It sure does. Well,
you didn't have any idea when you called, and now you have one.
You may be wrong, but at least you have an idea.
That's, as we say mathematically, 100% improvement.
But get it looked at. It has the potential to get dangerous. I mean, it's possible that something's getting ready to fall off, but I don't think so. See you later, John.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for your call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Connie.
Where are you from, Connie?
I'm calling you from Illinois.
Oh, you don't want to tell us where you're from. You're just calling us from Illinois. And you don't want to even tell us what city.
Rock Island.
Rock Island. Rock Island.
Island. Why?
I went to Rock Island recently.
Yeah? Spent the weekend there one night?
Yeah.
Well, so what's up?
Listen, I'm trying to settle an argument. My father and my brother both consider themselves to be mechanics. Mm. And my
But you know they're full of baloney, right?
Well, actually, they do fairly well on some. But my father bought a Ram Charger a few years ago. I think it's about an 80.
Mm-hmm.
And since he bought it, he has grown a little older and said that it's too high. And so he decided he would lower it. Now, if and when he gets this job done, the Ram Charger will be lower, but my brother maintains that it will never work properly.
So your question is either one of them right? Because I gather from your tone, Connie, that you suspect that both of them are wacko. I mean, am I right about this?
Well,
am I reading too much into it? What do you think, Connie?
Well, I think...
Let's just get your intuitive feel for it.
My intuitive feel is that enough people told my father that this could not be done that he decided that he bloody well would.
Oh, he's a stubborn old coot, eh?
It's done, I think.
Yeah.
I haven't heard about it being driven.
Oh.
So?
So?
Well, we don't know what they did to lower it.
Sure we do.
We do?
Well, how would you lower it?
I'm working on that right now.
You would take out pieces.
Well, I would probably change the springs.
Yeah.
And I suspect that they did that.
No, my dad did it by himself, whatever was done.
Yeah, well, he could do that.
No, he didn't. How old's your dad? Older guy?
75.
75.
Let the air out of the tires. I mean, the most efficient way of lowering it, or the best way to get the cheapest results here, would be to put smaller wheels and smaller tires on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would do.
Right. That would make it lower.
And I'd carry a cinder block on a rope. So when I wanted to get in and out, I'd throw that baby on. I mean, that's his biggest problem, getting in and out, right?
Yes.
I mean, he's not worried about getting nosebleeds, is he?
No, getting in and out. You're right. The cinder block is good, but it's a little heavy. But it would work.
So you don't know what he did, Connie?
I have no idea.
But how much did he spend to do this?
Nothing. Right?
I really don't know that either.
Oh. My guess would be that if he just put on smaller wheels and tires, that would in fact lower it, but it would look funny because it would have a huge space now between the top of the tire and the bumper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the fender.
The wheel opening.
The wheel opening.
Yeah.
So what
but they
really
always
wanna,
look stupid anyway.
They always look stupid, especially Ram Chargers are very high anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, then what you would want to do is take out leaves from the springs, for example. And that would be a hard thing to do.
Yeah, he didn't do that himself. I think he put smaller wheels and tires on there and got those chrome extenders for the fenders. And put those. Did he put any raccoon tails on, too? No, well, he should have.
But no matter what he did, my guess would be that he would be hard-pressed to do anything that would make the thing not run right.
Oh.
There isn't much you can do in the vertical direction that would change the handling of the vehicle very much.
Okay.
Or make it much worse. It already is pretty bad to begin with.
Right.
In fact, you might enhance its stability by lowering it.
Yeah. So I'm on your father's side. Tell your brother he's all wet. And dear old dad is doing it exactly right. And I'll bet you the thing rides like a dream. And now he can get in and out of it. And if he uses the cinder block theory as well, it's going to be great.
I like the cinder block. Tell them to put those big tires back on.
Okay, I just have one more question for my mother who wants to know if you think there would be much resale value for a lower brand charger.
Well, yeah, in Miami, Florida.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, they need a lot. They need four-wheel drive a lot in Miami. Good luck, Connie. I wouldn't ride with them for the first 1,000 miles or so. Let them go it alone. See you later.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
But that's a good question.
Yeah, too bad we hadn't a good answer.
Guess what? The Puzzler answer and more calls are coming up right after this.
Well, it's time for the answer to last week's Puzzler. This was an update of a previous puzzle. Not an update. What would you call that?
A review.
Rebuttal? Reconsideration?
A reconsideration. Yeah, reconsideration. That would be good. That would
in
be
the
good.
Vernacular. This is the right answer to a puzzle we used some time ago that we didn't.
What, this is some time ago?
Yes, some time ago.
Okay.
Maybe like in the past.
Yeah.
It could be some time ago in the future.
Yeah.
Okay, you ready for this?
I'm ready, yeah.
You remember this part? You go out to start your car on a cold winter morning.
Right. I remember this.
Turn the key.
Yeah.
And as the car roars to life, you aren't familiar with this experience,
I am.
Yours kind of whimpers or limps to life. You hear the following noise.
And you say,
and you know that that's a noisy belt, a slipping belt.
Right.
After a while, the noise, in fact, goes away. And we asked this question when we first gave the Puzzler, which belt is this most likely to be? And the answer to that was it's most likely to be the alternator belt, or the belt that goes around the alternator, and maybe other things as well, but around the alternator because the alternator is now being asked to recharge the battery because you've depleted the charge in the battery and the alternator is harder to turn and therefore the belt is more likely to slip.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's why it's making the noise because it, in fact, is slipping. And then here comes the hard part. Mm. Why does the noise go away?
Because you shut off the engine.
The noise goes away. We gave the answer because eventually the alternator has charged up the battery. That demand is not so great and the noise goes away. But why doesn't it come back later on as you're driving? For example, if you turn 17 things on, the rear window defogger, the headlights, the wipers, the tape player, et cetera, isn't it in fact not possible that the alternator is being asked to produce enough current now to make the belt slip? Huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
So why wouldn't the noise come back, one might say?
Well, we successfully skirted that issue and never addressed it when we did the Puzzler because...
I guess we never thought of it.
Well, we didn't know the answer.
And we didn't know why the
but
noise
now,
didn't come back.
But now, one of the ancestors of William M. Jeffers, who was...
The rubber king of America.
Who was the commissioner of rubber back during the great...
The
rubber
war.
Director during the Great World War, and that was the source of another puzzle, has written to us to say that what happens is... Rubber, or at least the kind of rubber that they make belts out of, when it heats up, actually shrinks.
Do you believe this?
Sounds good, but... So the rubber belt actually will get shorter.
Well, you can rest assured that someone from Akron, Ohio...
They ought to know.
They ought to know. Someone from Akron, Ohio will call us or write to us and tell us, is it true that when rubber that the belts are made out of gets warm... that it actually has a reverse coefficient.
Well, if anyone from Gates Rubber is listening, we would like to know the answer.
Fill us in on this one, will you?
And Gates makes all kinds of rubber products.
Oh, I thought they made Gates.
They do. They make rubber Gates, too. Anyway, someone actually knew the answer to this. I think it was the guy that wrote in with it. Do we have a winner? Do you want to read who the winner is? I mean, do you care to participate in this?
Oh, wait a minute now. Hold it.
Turn a few
Our
pages.
Winner. Here he is. Britton Nichols of Caterbury, New Hampshire. What is that? He will get the use of the car
Must be talk. Canterbury, huh? Try Canterbury.
Canterbury.
Yeah.
Sure. That sounds more like it.
Yeah.
Canterbury, New Hampshire. It gets the use of the Car Talk T-shirt for 1 week.
And.
Yeah.
A Save the Skeets bumper sticker.
Good for you.
We have a new Puzzler coming up. It's a beauty. So
we'll be the judge.
Stay tuned.
Of
In the
that.
Meantime, if you'd like to call us, the number is 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Robin Morris. I'm calling from Chagrin Falls, Ohio.
Chagrin Falls.
Hi, Robin.
Hi.
Well, aren't we embarrassed about this?
You're embarrassed? We love you here.
I'm embarrassed to not know where Chagrin Falls is.
It's not far from Cleveland.
Oh, okay. That's embarrassing enough.
Right near the ocean.
Pardon me?
Right near the ocean.
What ocean
it's
is
the
that?
The North Coast.
Yeah. So what's up?
Well, I have an 84 Rabbit, about 110,000 miles, We just had new brakes, shocks, and a new clutch cable. It's a great car until it got stuck in fourth gear and had to be towed home and sits in our driveway. It's been days now, stuck in fourth gear. Can't get it out. Is this an easy thing, just pop it out, or is this a need a whole new transmission to match the car?
You've never experienced any other difficulties with the transmission?
No, but we did just get a new clutch cable on it, I mean, just like 4 or 5 weeks ago, and now this has happened.
Unrelated.
Unrelated.
Okay.
Well, right. I believe so. You cannot shift it even when the engine is off?
Right. Cannot get it out of fourth no matter what.
What does it feel? I mean, if you tried to force it out of fourth? I'm not suggesting that you try to, you know, like put your foot against it or anything like
yes,
that.
Oh, yes. With all my might, with all my husband's might, we have tried. We thought, well, if the car's broken, we might as well try and break it.
I don't like that.
No.
I don't like that philosophy there.
We cannot get it out of fourth gear no matter what.
I have a novel idea.
Okay.
Now, you may not want to do this, but... but I think it might work. I think you should have it towed to the repair shop.
Yep.
And let them look at it, because it's possible that something is preventing it from moving.
Okay.
And I'll tell you one of the things that happens to these cars all the time, but I'd be surprised that you wouldn't be able to crush this thing, is the tube that connects the... it's a hot air tube that goes from the exhaust manifold up to the air cleaner.
Okay.
Sometimes falls off and gets wedged down in the shifter linkage.
Oh, okay.
So that you can't move the shifter.
Right.
But if you really muscle it, you can do it. But if you do that, you run the risk of bending. There's just a long rod that runs from the shifter up to the transmission.
Okay.
And if you bend that thing, you might get it out of fourth, but you might not have any second or third after. You might have first, fourth, and if you're lucky, reverse.
That's enough, actually.
Yeah, we could manage with
the rest is overkill.
Right?
Oh, yeah, after just having fourth, having three gears would be like, you know, manna from heaven.
No, but the fact that you've never experienced any other problems with the transmission would indicate that it's not inside the transmission and it has to do with linkage. And that's good, because linkage is cheap.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but if it were me, I'd probably expect the worst.
Duh.
Even though I'm suggesting that it could be as simple as what I suggested.
Yeah.
It is simple.
Expect
how bad is the worst?
The worst is that you need to replace the transaxle.
Okay.
Which isn't so bad.
No, because you'd go to a junkyard and you'd try to get one for a few hundred dollars.
Uh-huh.
And for another few hundred dollars you'd get someone to slap it in there.
And for another $100 or $200 you'd have a new clutch put in. Which you must be close to being ready for anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the worst is $500.
For about $5,000, you can get this thing shipshape again.
But that's not what's wrong with it. It's the linkage.
Okay.
I can almost guarantee you this. I will stake my brother's reputation on it.
Okay. Sure, what that's worth.
It's the linkage.
Good.
Bye-bye.
Good luck.
I do appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi there.
Hi, who's this?
This is Paula Wastenberg.
Hi, Paula.
Hi there.
Where are you from?
I'm calling from Carbondale, Colorado.
Carbondale? Where is Carbondale?
Well, it's about 20 miles down the road from Aspen, actually.
20 miles south?
No.
There are mountains 20 miles south, aren't there?
No, the other way.
The other way, east.
Kind of west, actually.
West, no, that's good. I got it.
On the one road that goes into Aspen, a little two-lane highway that's in there.
Well, what kind of a four-wheel drive vehicle do you own?
We own a 1990 Subaru Loyal station wagon, and it has a very unusual problem, and I'm sure you guys have heard of this one before, but it still has us completely befuddled.
Yeah.
When the temperature gets to a certain low point, and I'm not sure when it is, but it is below freezing, definitely. It's at least zero and probably more like five below.
Yeah.
For instance, if we've left the garage door open by accident overnight, all of a sudden, in the middle of the night usually...
The horn starts blowing.
Horn starts to beep, yeah.
Yeah, that's a safety feature. That's to tell you that you left the garage door open.
I guess it's just the nuttiest thing, you know. It wakes you up, you know, you sit up stone upright in bed at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you got to think your neighbors think you're absolutely nuts.
I mean, is it a little beep beep, or is it a...
No, it's a full-on beep, and it's
full
really
on.
Loud.
Full tilt, huh?
Yeah, full tilt beep. And you can get it to stop by pulling toward you on the bottom of the steering wheel, and it will stop. But the easiest thing to do is just to pull the fuse.
Right, that is easy. So if you...
Well, that's good. That's a good hint. I mean, the fact that by pulling forward on the steering wheel makes it stop
indicates
that the problem is not in the horn relay, which is under the hood or under the dash, but in fact in the horn switch in the steering wheel.
Yeah.
Right. Somehow or another, the horn ring is shrinking and or something's moving when it gets that cold, and it's making electrical contact.
Things shrink when they get cold, and they expand, except for rubber.
Right, we know that.
And water.
Right. And water, right.
And water. Those are the only two.
If you called the dealer and told, I mean, if you can't be the only Subaru owner in Carbondale, Colorado.
You
want to
bet?
Well, you know, we bought it in Boulder, so, maybe that's the problem or something. But, no, we actually haven't called them yet. I think the fear was that they wouldn't be able to recreate the problem.
Yeah, no, but they won't really have to recreate the problem, because if you describe it to them, and especially if you tell them where you're pulling on it to get it to stop,
okay,
they'll have to take the steering wheel apart, and they'll figure it out.
Right,
it's probably five minutes of fixing once they take everything apart.
Okay.
That's 4 hours of labor. That's $60 an hour. That's $240.
But it's covered by warranty.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're going to know what it is. When you call them up, they're going to say, oh, yeah.
Okay.
And when you find out, call us back.
Okay, great.
See you, Paula.
Okay, thanks. Hey, bye.
You know, bye-bye.
Speaking of puzzlers.
Yes.
Recently we had a puzzler about the sum of a series of numbers.
Yes, indeed.
And we have got, we've got more answers, and it has brought out of the woodwork more mathematics professors. Most of them had the right answer, but who the person was, of course, was, we said Carl Friedrich Gauss. In fact, it's Johann Carl Friedrich Gauss. But people have attributed this to Einstein, Gauss, Newton, Blaise Pascal, Fibonacci, René Descartes, Gottfried von Leibniz, and
Vinnie Gumbatz.
We got a letter. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready for everything.
Check out this letterhead.
From Kurt Friedrich Gauss.
The boy, he explains our puzzler, and he says, the boy you refer to was Carl Friedrich Gauss, of which I am his seventh direct descendant.
No kidding.
And have inherited no mathematical ability aside from balancing my checkbook on an annual basis, for which I take great pride. I love it.
It is wonderful. And I know you love to read mail. And
the prince of mathematics.
We will put all those in your bathroom, Thomas, so you can read them at your leisure.
I thought it was quite awesome.
It is.
Hey, stick around for more calls and the new puzzler coming right up.
You're back with NPR's Car Talk and us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to answer your questions about everything,
I have a poem about cars,
how to make your car go 200,000 miles without getting behind the wheel.
Bill Reed from Westville, New Jersey, put these words together. I thought it was brilliant.
Winter is a grand old time.
This one is not X-rated. The title is Rattle, Rattle. Rattle, rattle in my car, how I wonder where you are. In the doors, the dash, the seat, near my head, my hands, my feet. Are you inside? Are you out? Do you maybe move about? Rattle, rattle in my car, are you near or are you far? Are you metal? Are you glass? Will you linger? Will you pass? Are you bolts or springs, I sigh? Are you nuts or else am I? I like that.
That is very good.
That's similar words to my poem once, which I unfortunately have been barred from radio with, but I thought it was...
Well, you have, but I can say it.
You can say it. That's
right. I'll save it for the appropriate season.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, it's time.
Oh, I've been waiting for this.
It's time for the new puzzler. And as I promised, this wasn't going to be as lousy as the last one. The last ones. Well, no, there have been a few good ones. There's been a one or two. We had one good one once.
try it out on us.
All right, here it is.
Yeah.
There is a smell that comes from modern cars that people associate with the catalytic converter.
Mm.
Okay?
Yes.
And I'm going to ask about another smell that comes from cars with catalytic converters. Okay? Modern cars. So you often get this smell from cars that are equipped with catalytic converters.
But is this some new technology that you have run across? I mean, I know we can make sounds over the radio.
I could not
Are you going to reproduce a smell?
At some point, I will divulge what the smell is. And when I do divulge...
Oh, it's not necessary to ask the question, though.
No, it is the answer to the question.
Oh, the answer. Okay. Yeah, I got it now.
Okay, so when I divulge what the smell is, everyone will say, oh, of course, I know what that smell is. Anyway, there is a smell that modern cars equipped with catalytic converters make, okay?
Yeah.
Which is not coming from inside the converter. It has nothing to do with what's going on inside the converter.
Oh.
Okay.
And yet it is coming somehow from the catalytic converter.
Well, it is... It is
related to it, at least.
It is indeed related to that.
Yeah.
And I will give a hint. It has something to do with the fact that, well, it's hard to give this hint without giving it away, but I will do it anyway. No, I won't give it away.
No, you can't give it away. No,
if cars of 50 years ago had catalytic converters, they would not have made this smell.
Ooh.
This smell would not come from these cars. And it has nothing to do with the gasoline.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with leaded or unleaded gas.
Right. I'm sure everyone had their pencils out. It was just ready to scribble.
So the story here is, if there is a smell that comes that is related to catalytic converters, however, it is not anything having to do with what goes on inside the catalytic converter.
It must therefore have something to do with what?
Something outside, perhaps.
Right.
And if cars of 50 years ago, 1931 Chevys, had catalytic converters for some strange reason, they would not have this smell ever.
You would not get this smell.
Yeah.
Right. It would indeed be a rare occurrence. It might have happened, but it would indeed be
rare.
That's why
I was pressing you on that.
Well.
It would be a rare occurrence, whereas it's certainly not a rare occurrence today.
So if you think you know the answer, please write to us at once. We don't know what the answer is.
Immediately.
Right. Send us a fax. Do anything. But if you care to write to us, the address is Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, WBUR 630 Commonwealth Ave, Boston.
Our fair city.
Mass 02215.
Not Mass. Mass is gone. Either it's Massachusetts
or
it's Ma.
1-800-332-9287 or 617-353-6350. Oh, very, what do you call that?
Stereophonic.
Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Maz from Shell Beach, California.
Maz?
Yes.
From where?
Shell Beach, California.
Shell Beach?
Yeah.
Where's that?
Shell Beach, it's probably about halfway between Los Angeles and San Francisco on the coast.
Oh, on the way up near San Luis Obispo.
Yeah, that's it.
Right about, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's up, man?
Sounds like a real goof-off part of the world. Does anyone really work there?
Well...
So what do you run, the surf shop or what?
I don't know what the rest of the world is doing.
What are you doing there?
What kind of a kamikaze do you drive?
Oh, you're going to love this.
You got a Suzuki kamikaze.
No,
don't
no.
You?
No, no.
A Volkswagen microbus.
No.
You used to have one, though, huh?
No, no.
No, no. Maz is not old enough to have had one.
Bug, yeah.
No, not old enough.
She's not old enough for that. Maz is into one of these utility vehicles. I can see. Utility vehicle,
Subaru.
You have me all wrong.
We have you all wrong.
What kind of an Eldorado do you have then? Come on, Maz, don't keep us in suspense.
All right, what? I give up then.
I'll give you a hint.
All right, give us a hint and give us three guesses.
Can I just give you a hint?
Yeah, give us a hint.
Okay, my mechanic's name is Terry.
Terry.
Right.
Oh,
that's
British.
When I take my car to him, I say, "Fix it again, Terry."
Oh,
my fiat.
God, Sonia, and his tutu.
Gina, Lola, Brigida.
Really?
Yeah.
Which type?
I have a 124 Spyder.
124 Spyder, yeah.
Yeah, it's a 77.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And I've had it for 3 years.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Of course you do.
I love it, yeah.
You sounded like a wacko as soon as we heard your voice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think an Italian should own an Italian car, don't you?
You're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
I think.
Yeah.
That's why I got my 63 Dodge Dattro. All right. How many things are wrong with this little Spyder that you want to discuss?
Well...
We only got about an hour or so let's, right. You know...
It's the brakes. It's leaking oil. Let's see, what else?
No, it always
did that. This is what's the new problem?
Had an oil leak.
Yeah.
But the bewilderment or the puzzling thing, ever since I've owned it, when I downshift, it sounds like there's birds in the transmission. It sort of chortles when I downshift.
When exactly in the process of, let's say you're driving along in fourth gear, you decide to downshift.
Mm-hmm. And it mostly happens when I'm going to be coming to a stop.
Okay,
like,
now
I'm getting off the freeway, and I know there's a stop sign.
Okay.
I downshift, and...
But the downshifting takes certain steps. First, you step on the clutch.
Uh-huh.
Then you take the car out of fourth.
Right, he'll go through the steps, and you come in with the chirping whenever
you
want.
Ready? Here we are. We're driving.
Okay,
I'm in
fifth.
Ready to downshift.
Fifth gear.
In fifth gear. I step on the clutch. Any chirp yet?
No.
I pull it out of fifth.
Well, I give it gas, so when I downshift.
Okay, I give it a little bit of gas. Now I toss it into fourth gear.
Okay.
And now I
take
my foot off the clutch.
It doesn't seem like it happens from fifth to fourth.
Okay, let's go. What? How about third to second?
No. When I'm slowing down.
Okay, we're slowing down.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
let's say we're in
fourth, and I clutch, and I give it a little bit of gas, and go into third.
Right. Any chirp yet?
Yes. Chortle.
Give us a chirp. Yes. You have to make the noise first, though. I'm not so sure that we think it's making the same noise that you think it's making.
Yeah, make the noise.
Make the noise?
Yeah.
It sounds like...
You have a car phone?
It's sort of like...
Burp.
Oh.
Yeah, it's sort of...
Oh, it's just a one-time... Burp.
Yeah.
Does it happen in all gears except fifth?
Yeah, I don't notice it too much in fifth.
You're very vague about this, Maz. I mean, come on, we want the facts here. How can we work? It's bad enough trying to do this at long distance.
Like I say, it's been happening for the past 3 years, so I'm sort of...
You get so used to it.
Exactly.
You don't even hear it anymore. You're not missing any pets or anything.
No.
And you only get this one downshifting, eh?
And it's not as quick as you do it.
Brrr.
Oh.
It's more of a chortle, a higher. Yeah.
Did my wife have you call?
You know,
is this a trick?
Fact,
are we on totally ridiculous videos or something?
It's
kind of a nice sound. I can't, you know, usually I have an intuitive sense for this stuff. And this means nothing to me. I'm not picking up any vibes at all.
Well, I'll tell you one of the problems. Cars have their own idiosyncratic behaviors, noises, et cetera, et cetera.
We call them personalities.
Right.
In other words, there are sounds that Fiats make that no other cars would ever make. But I would confess that we're probably a little out of touch with some of these sounds because we haven't really worked on that many Fiats in the last decade or two. So had we more familiarity...
Yeah.
With these cars, we'd be able to say, oh, yeah, I mean, if you called up with a similar noise from, say,
a 63 Dodge Dart, then you'd pull it right out.
Or an 82 Celebrity or Cavalier or something. We'd say, oh, yeah, sure, we know what that is.
Yeah.
But I don't know what this is. I'm going to suggest that it might be something that's loose, maybe a something in the exhaust system even rattling, maybe a baffle in one of your mufflers.
That's good. Here we are. See, this is one of those... One of those cases where, if we don't know the answer, we change the question.
Right.
But you have brought it to a whole new level. It could, in fact, be a rattle. I wasn't thinking rattle, but Maz has been telling us for 5 minutes it's higher pitched than what we're doing.
It lasts long.
It is a rattle in the exhaust system. That's the final word. Now, I'm sure there are probably many, many other Fiat Spider owners out there who are just grabbing for their pencils as we speak.
And they're going to write us a little note.
The notes usually start this way. Dear knuckleheads, again, you have misled someone. And you can probably figure out the rest. So when those notes show up...
We'll announce it.
We'll read it
on the air. We'll send you a note.
You'll be
at the beach, right?
Yeah.
What do you do for a living, Maz?
Don't tell me.
Well, notice she's hesitating, which means she doesn't do very much of anything. Am I right, Maz? Come on. Come on, fess up here. We do a lot of hanging out, don't we?
Well, how did you know?
Yeah, well, I can tell. Everything is in the voice. Yeah.
He's applied for a visa. That's why he knows. Maz, we got to go because Nickel's running out.
Hey, stay in touch, though.
Okay,
nice talking
you very
to you.
Much.
Great talking to you. Bye-bye.
Ciao.
Well, another hour of NPR's Car Talk has mercifully come to an end. Our producer is the one and only Doug Berman. God for that. Our assistant producer is Dawn Jennings.
All of Jennings Enterprises.
Who does most of the work.
Yeah.
And the person who does all the rest of the work that Jennings doesn't do is Stephanie Cool.
She does everything.
Ken Rogers is our engineer and dean of the Department of Automusicology.
Genius in his own right.
Our
genius in his own left, for that matter.
Our technical advisor is John Bugsy.
John Lawler.
John Bugsy Lawler.
Q. Lawler.
Our public opinion upholsterer is Paul Murky of Murky Research, who we'll see at the upholstery convention next month.
International upholstery convention.
Our automotive medical researcher is Dr. Denton Fender, the manager of the Tappan Brothers Capital Depreciation Fund, is Less Is More. Our staff composer, of course, is Bela Kartok.
Gigi does our hair.
We're Click and Clack, the Tappan Brothers. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye. This is NPR, National Public Radio.